Oh, listen to me, lady. Listen to me, bud. If you want to be my happy, then you want to smoke Spud.
Yes, Spud cigarettes. Finer, milder tobaccos with a touch of fresh minted menthol. Spud cigarettes are actually cooler than cool. Be mouth happy. Get Spud today, tipped or plain ends at regular prices.
Next, Chinese Ambassador Dr. Wellington Ku meets the press. This is WNBT New York, Channel 4.
Meet the press.
Our guest of the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, will be Dr. Wellington Ku, Chinese Ambassador to the United States. But before we meet the press, we are privileged to announce that Meet the Press has just been selected as the best educational or public service program in the FAME video poll conducted by Motion Picture Daily. And now let's meet a Revere product that can save you many, many dollars in home repair bills. Make your home a better place in which to live.
Don't think your home is safe from roof leaks. This can occur in brand new homes that are not properly sealed with the right flashing material. Let your Revere contractor show you what I mean.
No matter how tightly the joints on the outside of your home are fitted together, they will leak if not sealed with flashing. Flashing of Revere copper seals the joints, makes your home waterproof. That's why, to prevent leaks in your home, vital joints around the chimney, in roof valleys, over windows and doors, and where the roof joins the wall, should be flashed or sealed with Revere copper. Gutters and downspouts should be made of Revere copper, too.
Revere copper cannot rust or rot, doesn't need paint to protect it, and when properly installed, lasts as long as the house. The cost of copper may be slightly more than rustable, short-lived materials, yet installation costs no more. Seal your home against weather once and for all. When you build, buy, or repair, make sure vital joints are sealed with non-rusting Revere copper. Consult your local Revere contractor.
You'll find me wherever you see this trademark.
Whether it's copper flashing for the outside of your home, cooking utensils for your kitchen, or a special copper or aluminum alloy for industry, insist on products that bear these trademarks. They're backed by a century and a half of experience in the manufacture of metals. And now, ladies and gentlemen, meet the press. Ready for today's unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference are America's top reporters. Please remember that their questions do not necessarily reveal their point of view. It's their way of getting a story for you. And I'll meet Mr. Lawrence Spivak of Mercury Publications, a regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Mrs. Ruth Montgomery of the New York Daily News. Mr. Peter Edson of the Newspaper Enterprise Association. Finally, Miss Martha Roundtree, moderator of Meet the Press.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, members of the press panel, and Mr. Ambassador. If you're all set now, I think we'll let Mrs. Montgomery have the first question.
Mr. Ambassador, if the U.S. 7th Fleet were removed from Formosa, do you think that the Chinese Communists could make a successful invasion now?
Well, to carry an invasion force across 100 miles of water will be quite an undertaking. And the forces on the island of Formosa are prepared to resist any invasion that may come across the mainland.
Of course, that same 100 miles of water is what you hope to cross to make an invasion of the mainland, isn't it?
That's right. Eventually, we hope to go back to mainland sooner or later, and knowing that we are in the same cause, the cause of the free world, we hope that when we do that, we will be supported by aid from friendly countries.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, when that great day comes, I'm sure you regard it as that, do you think that the atom bomb should be used on Chinese cities?
Well, that is a very important question. I'm not a military man, but I feel that the atom bomb is a military weapon. Whether that should be used, I think it should be decided by the military people as well as the political people. How far that will be effective in checking aggression and bringing about a world peace.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm sure you get regular intelligence from your people in China, on the mainland of China. Can you give us any specific information at all about whether the Russians are actually engaged in this battle against the UN forces?
Well, Mr. Spivak, we have been receiving a steady flow of intelligence reports. I can give you a few facts, for example. In the 12 days from January 9 to January 21st, four groups of Russian planes went from Chita and Nikolaevsk in Siberia to Harbin, Manchuria, and Mukden. And it so happened that on the 21st of January, a Tokyo communique said that the U.S. Air Force, under the name of the United Nations, Aegis, had to face the biggest contingent of enemy communist planes, 41 jets, for example. Now, I leave it to you to draw the conclusion.
Well, are they being flown by Russians or are they being flown by Chinese aviators?
Well, as far as I know, we haven't, and I know the communists haven't had any trained pilots to pilot jet planes. The first batch of Chinese communists to be trained as jet pilots started only on 14th of January this year, 1951.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, what you're saying actually then is that in spite of all this mealy-mouthed talk, the Russians and the United Nations forces are actually engaged in a war today.
Mr. Spivak, I think to me it's the fact is very obvious. Take the MG-15, the jet plane. Well, that's made in Russia. Take the T-35 tanks, for example. They are the Russian tanks. The Chinese communists haven't been able to manufacture or build either a jet plane or a tank.
Now, what does your intelligence tell you about Russian soldiers? Are there any Russian officers or are there any Russian soldiers engaged, as far as you know? Land soldiers.
Yeah. Our reports indicate at present there are about 10 divisions in Manchuria outside Port Arthur. And there are 5 divisions in Port Arthur. They are scattered outside of Port Arthur in 5 cities, including Mukden and Changchun. Changchun, you know, which is very near the Korean border, as well as Mukden is very close to the Korean border.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, we've talked now about Russians who are fighting in China. What about your own nationalist troops? We've heard a lot of talk about guerrillas, and we've wondered sometimes what has happened to that 4 million army that the nationalists at one time had on the continent. What has happened to those people? Have they gone over to the communists, or are they still on your side?
Well, a great part of those forces were scattered. A very small portion went over to the communist side. Large bodies were deliberately, purposely left on the mainland to carry on guerrilla fighting. Still other large bodies of nationalist forces are carrying on in the remote corners, carrying on operations against the communist forces. All told, we have today still 1,600,000 armed forces carrying on guerrillas here and there on the mainland.
Mr. Edson.
Well, now, can you tell us a little bit about the forces on Formosa without revealing any military information? Are all those troops, what are there, about 400,000?
650,000.
How many of those are ready for combat? How many of them would be ready for an invasion of the China mainland?
Well, after providing for the defense of Formosa, we can spare about a half of that number to carry out operations on the mainland.
Have you submitted any plans for an invasion of the mainland to the United States?
Well, not detailed plans, because our military people naturally don't want to force things. And when the time is considered opportune by your government that such operations should take place, we will be ready to, of course, submit those plans.
Are your troops fully equipped? How much would you need in the way of additional arms, ammunition, air support, naval support, to mount an invasion of the mainland.
Well, about half of our forces are in a position to carry out operations. They are equipped, but of course our equipment is not of the same standard as your armed forces. So I think we would need certain amount of new equipment, certain amount of supplies, and certain amount of air and military naval support.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Did your intelligence sources that we were speaking of a moment ago report to Chang or any of your government the fact that the Chinese Reds were going to invade Korea?
Our reports began to come in as early as April last year. The movement of troops northward, they were laying plans, and the conferences between Russian military officers and Chinese communist officers outside of Peking making plans for aggression.
Well, did you then pass this information on to our government that it looked like the Chinese Reds were about to move into Korea?
Well, unofficially, informally, we've been doing that right along.
Well, do you feel that they ignored your information then because it seemed to us that it was such a surprise attack when it came?
Well, that I cannot say because I'm sure the Americans have their own intelligence sources, you see, and I suppose they must check and compare the different reports and draw their own conclusions.
But of course Congress says that our military intelligence out there fell down badly and that General MacArthur's forces were caught by surprise. Do you know whether that's true?
Well, I can't make any comment on that.
Mr. Spivey.
Mr. Ambassador, by his actions, Mayo has done almost everything possible to antagonize the United Nations, and yet seems most anxious to get in. Now, how do you explain that contradiction?
Well, that's the way the communists the world over do, you see. When they want to attend some object, they always demand it as a matter of right, basing their own action upon their own code.
Well, what would they hope to gain from getting into this organization?
Well, at present, there's only one power that continuously exercises a veto, and one against four in the Security Council.
Well, that seems to be enough, though.
Still, it would be, I think, it would certainly strengthen that power when it can count upon another veto to go along with it.
Now, I have two other questions. What would happen if the UN admitted China, communist China, and gave it a seat? What do you think would happen in China and in the world?
Well, I think that the admission of the communists would simply strengthen the Soviet bloc, which has all along been obstructing the progress of the United Nations.
Well, do you think it would hinder or contribute towards peace?
Well, I'm afraid it would greatly hinder the path of peace.
Now, what do you think would happen if we branded China as an aggressor?
Well, I think, in my opinion, that should have been done long ago. Under the Charter, there is no other way of calling aggression. Aggression is aggression. And the first thing to do is to declare the aggressor.
And then what?
Then to follow up with such measures as may be effective to stop aggression.
Well, do you think it would contribute to the strength of the continent if a full-fledged war were started in Asia, as might happen if you branded them as aggressors and then gave all-out aid to the Chinese nationalists?
Well, personally, I don't think branding the communists as aggressors would in any way promote or provoke a general war. What the communists want in this world and do is to try to instill fear in the peoples of the free world. And if the free world begins to show fear, that's exactly what they want. They hope to attain their objects by threats, intimidation, and as a last resort, by force. If they could do it without force, They would prefer to get it that way.
Well, but don't you agree, though, that if there's the slightest chance of separating Mayo from the Russians, that branding him as an aggressor would put an end to that? That's the position that the British, for example, have taken?
I don't think so myself. The Chinese communists and the Russians are working hand in hand, and they are working for the same common objective of international communism, which is world domination. And they are now working very closely. The Soviet technicians and advisors are today in China by the tens of thousands, something like 42,000 on mainland China.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Mr. Ambassador, do you think that India's Prime Minister Nehru is following the communist line in the present UN crisis?
Well, I cannot say that he's doing that, but certainly I cannot understand the position he's taken. He talks of the necessity of facing realities, and by realities he means that communist China is big, is powerful, and therefore they should be admitted. But over and above those facts, those realities, there's another reality, that is to say that the Chinese communists are committing flagrant aggression. Now, that's an obvious fact. That is a reality of which it seems to me that he has not taken note.
Well, why do you think that he's so consistently siding with the Chinese communists against the United States policy?
I'm afraid I cannot read his mind, because the Indian position is just as much a puzzle to me, unless he is, Mr. Nehru, as representing India, is trying to play the game of world politics, power politics, in the terms of the 19th century world politics.
Why do you think he appeared so indifferent to the communist China invasion of Tibet?
Well, there again is another reality to which he seems to be blind, or not taking any note of.
Wouldn't you think that since his country lies so close to theirs, that he might very muchly be siding with the other side and trying to solicit all the aid he could in the eventuality of an invasion there?
Well, that is a possibility, I think, in his mind. Although I cannot understand India's attitude.
Mr. Edson.
Well, in connection with the United Nations effort to bring around a ceasefire, several questions. Would the Chinese nationalist government sit in conference with the Red Chinese in an effort to settle the problems of Asia as they have proposed, as the Red Chinese have proposed?
Well, you know, we consider the national government of the Republic of China as the lawful member of the United Nations. And if you look up the Charter of the United Nations, it is mentioned among the five permanent members of the Security Council. It says the Republic of China. Now, the communists don't represent the Republic of China at all.
Well, I know, but they are proposing a conference outside the United Nations of five or seven powers. Now, would you sit in such a conference with them?
We would sit in to defend the rights of the Republic of China. And it is not within our power to decide alone on the presence of the communists or not. We certainly hope that they will not be admitted.
Okay. Well, all right, now one other question on the what the United Nations is proposing. They're proposing a blockade, exercise of sanctions against communist China. Do you think a blockade of the China coast could be made effective, and do you think it would help bring the Red Chinese governments to its knees?
Personally, I feel the United Nations should stop at nothing to stop aggression. And if a blockade can be helpful in stifling the ambitions and in checking the activities of the aggressive communists in communist China, I don't see why that should not be enforced.
Mr. Dick Wilson.
Mr. Ambassador, I'd like to ask you two questions, or three, affecting the military position of the nationalist troops with respect to the communists and with respect to us. There have been many reports that large forces are now assembling off Formosa for a prospective invasion when the weather improves. Could you tell us anything about that?
The gathering of communist forces,
yes,
for the invasion of Formosa.
Yes.
Yes, we have intelligence. We have reports coming in showing that they are moving some troops southward from the north and troops from the west toward the east coast. So far, we are not, our military command is not sure yet whether those forces are there for defense against possible operations from Formosa or for launching a full-scale invasion of Formosa.
Could you stop that invasion, Mr. Ambassador?
A little while ago, I just stated that our forces on the island of Formosa are ready to resist any invasion force that may come.
Is it not true, however, that they do not have adequate arms, nor ships, nor anything else to actually cope with the situation? Isn't there a risk, in other words, that the nationalist government cannot deliver on its claims?
Well, our forces, when I speak of our forces, I speak of our armed forces. And I mentioned a little while ago, we have about 650,000 on the island. They are armed, but they are not armed to the extent as, for example, your forces are armed. Our equipment, much of it is out of date, and we would need replenishment and also steady flow of military supplies to carry on a prolonged fight.
Is that coming in now? Are the military supplies going there?
To some extent.
To what extent would you say, sir?
We are getting some spare parts. We're getting some ammunition in very limited quantities.
Is that coming from this country?
Yes.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Ambassador, if the war in Asia were extended, do you think that that would help to start the European war, or that it might act as a deterrent on the Russians?
Well, Mr. Spivak, on that score, I decidedly feel that it would act as a deterrent, because the communists, whether they are Chinese communists or Russian communists or any other brand of communists, they recognize only one thing: force. And when they feel that the free world is determined to resist to the best of its ability, then they will think twice before they will launch attack elsewhere.
Now, one other question that has puzzled me. This has puzzled me for some time. The Chinese have been engaged in battle and war for almost 17 years, I think. Now, how strong are they? And how willing are they to fight? And what is the strength of their economy for carrying on a war against a first-rate nation?
You are referring to the Chinese communists.
I'm talking to those on the mainland, yes.
Yes. Well, you know, in this act of aggression, the people are not with the communist rulers. And you will recall not very long ago, Chinese prisoners taken by the United Nations forces, quite a few of them declared that they didn't want to carry on the fight. They want to go to Formosa and join the forces of the Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek.
Well, why didn't more of them respond to Chiang Kai-shek's invitation in Korea to desert and join the United Nations forces?
Well, of course, there you raise a question of which is related to the communist technique of very close supervision and control of their forces. And, you know, in their, the main bulk of their armed forces are not communists. But then in every division, regiment, even company, they blend, intersperse the forces. Every 8 or 10 soldiers, they put one communist soldier there. That way they keep a very strict supervision over the forces.
One other question. Why did the Chinese communists, in your judgment, wait so long to attack in Korea? Why didn't they go into it right from the start? Why did they go into it at that late date, in your judgment?
Well, that's because the first part of the plan was that the North Koreans would be quite able to take care of, to overrun South Korea. Then when they showed that they weren't able to do it. Then the Chinese communists, who had been helping the North Koreans undercover, were urged by Moscow to go in full force. And that took some time because but at that time, the North Koreans were practically washed out.
Mr. Edson.
Originally, I believe the Chinese nationalist government offered about 30,000 troops for Korea. Has the situation changed in your estimate? Do you think those troops should be sent to Korea still? Or do you think they should be retained on Formosa for the defense of the island there?
Well, Mr. Edson, our offer of 33,000 troops was made, I think, within 3 days after the outbreak of the Korean War. And that offer still stands. As to where they should be best utilized, that is up to the United Nations command. Whatever they say, we will be willing to give our fullest cooperation.
One other question. Can you make a dollar estimate of what it would take in the way of American aid to fully equip the Nationalist Army? That is, we talk about a $6.5 billion program for Europe. What is the proportion? What is the nature of the...
You're going to have to name a figure in a hurry, Mr. Ambassador. You have 2 minutes.
I see. Well, it would take greatly less than it would take in the case of the Western Army.
I'm sorry. I have to interrupt. I couldn't be sorry. I wish we could have heard that figure, but our time is up. This concludes our latest edition of Meet the Press. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for being with us. And now, a word about next week's guest.
Next week, Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated will again present America's press conference of the air, Meet the Press. Be sure to join us then when our guest will be Senator Stiles Bridges of New Hampshire, the ranking Republican member of the Armed Services Committee and a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. And now, good afternoon for Mr. Richard Wilson, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Mrs. Ruth Montgomery, Mr. Peter Edson, Miss Martha Roundtree, Dr. Wellington Koo. You've met the press, now meet Revereware, that line of famous copper-clad stainless steel cooking utensils made by Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated.
Ever have trouble with eggs sticking? This cook doesn't. Eggs slide from skillet to plate as slick and as appetizing as can be. She fries them in butter in a Revereware skillet over a low flame. The secret is the combination of stainless steel and copper from which Revereware skillets are made. The copper bottom spreads the heat quickly, evenly. The stainless steel body holds that heat. That's why you need only the lowest heat to cook quickly in a Revereware skillet. What's more, cooking in Revereware brings out the full flavor of food. There is a complete line of Revere copper-clad stainless steel cooking utensils to fill your every cooking need. When hung on this handy Revere rack in your kitchen, they'll save you time, always be at your fingertips, brighten your kitchen with their lasting beauty. This trademark in the copper bottom identifies genuine Revereware. Insist on it.
Meet the Press is owned and produced by Martha Roundtree and Lawrence Spivak and brought to you each week by Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated. This is Tom Kennedy speaking.
NBC Television.